Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another podcast. I'm Christina Vogt, Assistant Editor for Consultant360.com. Today, I'm joined by Dr. James Matera, Nephrologist and Medical Director of Population Health at Central State Medical Center in Freehold, New Jersey. Thank you for joining me, Dr. Matera.
It's great to be here, and Happy New Year to everyone.
Today, our discussion will be centered around the interaction between kidney disease, cardiovascular disease, and diabetes, and how the presence of these conditions in combination can affect treatment and outcomes. So, Dr. Matera, what are the mechanisms between kidney disease, diabetes, and cardiovascular disease? How does one cause the other, and what risk factors may play a role?
This is so interesting because as a nephrologist, I see primarily kidney disease, but all my patients, or at least a vast majority of them, have interactions with diabetes as the cause and all these sequelae that can occur. It's very common to see an interaction of all three of these conditions. And if you look at atherosclerotic cardiovascular disease, which we're defining as coronary heart disease, cerebrovascular disease, or even peripheral arterial disease, presumed to be of atherosclerotic origin, it's really the leading cause of morbidity and mortality for our patient population with diabetes. And it's certainly the largest contributor to both direct and indirect costs of diabetes. By direct costs, we see certainly things like medical treatments, therapies, procedures, but indirect costs and loss of ability to work, loss of income. So these are factors we have to look at. With cardiovascular risk factors particularly, they have to be systemically assessed at least annually in all of our patients who have diabetes. And we all know the risk factors: hypertension, hyperlipidemia, smoking history, certainly family history of premature coronary artery disease, chronic kidney disease, and interestingly enough, albuminuria is also a very good marker. When you look at diabetic kidney disease, this actually may be also a marker of cumulative vascular damage that can be due to the diabetes itself, or it may actually promote cardiovascular disease through many mechanisms. Some of these mechanisms would be blood pressure dysregulation, and over the last 2 years, we've seen a dramatic change in the way we handle blood pressure, retention of uremic toxins, development of anemia and chronic kidney disease, and altered mineral metabolism with elements like phosphorus and potassium becoming more difficult to control. And there have been studies suggesting the preponderance of excess cardiovascular disease risk in both type 1 and type 2 diabetes is restricted to people with diabetic kidney disease. Now, we don't think that's necessarily true, but certainly a big risk factor. And if we look at one of the main studies that came out, the Diabetes Control and Complications, or the DCCT trial, that clearly demonstrated that early intensive diabetes therapy substantially reduced the risks of diabetic kidney disease, cardiovascular disease, and mortality in, that was in type 1 diabetes, as published in the New England Journal of Medicine. So those are things that we certainly look at. Just one other thing on the chronic kidney disease side, the way we see that disease, diabetes, affect kidneys is it results in hyperfiltration of the glomeruli initially. Then you develop hypertension in the glomeruli, renal hypertrophy, altered glomerular composition, and then you start to develop albuminuria and hypertension, which is a marker of established kidney disease with diabetes.
What types of renal, diabetic, and cardiac complications can typically occur in patients with any or all of these conditions?
Also a very good question. We see multiple complications that stem from almost all systemic involvement in diabetes, whether it be cardiovascular, vascular itself, peripheral nervous system, renal, and infectious diseases. Many times we see our patients come in with diabetic foot ulcers. Many times it's important deciding not only how to treat the disease, but what medications we want to use that would be beneficial for risk reduction. There's been a long-standing ongoing research as to which of the diabetic or oral hypoglycemic agents would be better for certain types of disease states. And I'll give you an example. An article that just came out this week in JAMA looked at one of the DPP-4 inhibitors, namely linagliptin, and they looked particularly at what they called high cardiovascular and renal risks. This was the CARMELINA trial, and again, just published, and that stands for cardiovascular events in adults with type 2 diabetes mellitus and high cardiovascular and renal risks. It looked at about 3,500 patients with primary endpoints of the time to first occurrence of a cardiovascular death, non-fatal MI or stroke, and the secondary outcome was the first occurrence to adjudicated death due to renal failure end-stage renal disease, or a 40% decline that was sustained in estimated GFR. Interestingly enough, linagliptin, which was the DPP-4 inhibitor that they used, came out as being non-inferior to placebo with regard to major cardiovascular events in patients followed out over 2.2 years. So the jury is still out on some of these medications. We certainly know that some of them have had adverse effects, but we've also seen where some studies have been showing positive cardiovascular risk reduction and even improvement in some renal aspects with some of the medications, especially the newer agents. I'd like to refer the group to a very, very good article in the American Journal of Cardiology from November of last year, which goes over all of the different classes of the diabetic medications and their potential impacts on cardiovascular disease.
How does the presence of any or all of these conditions affect treatment options and outcomes?
That's the million-dollar question. There's definitely an intersection of diabetes, ASCVD complications, and heart failure, as well as chronic kidney disease. And the importance in determining diabetes therapies that are not only safe but effective is paramount. That's what we just discussed. So in the DECLARE-TIMI 58 trial, they looked at the SGLT2 inhibitor, namely dapagliflozin, and also found that it was non-inferior to placebo with respect to the primary safety outcome of cardiovascular disease. It did not significantly lower the rate of cardiovascular disease, but in a broad population, patients with type 2 diabetes mellitus, it did result in a lower rate of cardiovascular death or hospitalization for heart failure compared to placebo. And there were also some additional findings of a possible lower rate of adverse renal outcomes. So since these diseases intersect in our patients, and there's not a day that goes by that my patients have one, two, or all three of these conditions, that we have to really pay attention to not only what we're looking for in the future, but how we're currently treating the patient to get to their goals.
In terms of reducing complications from cardiovascular disease, diabetes, and kidney disease, where do the new 2017 hypertension guidelines fit in? How have they changed the landscape when it comes to managing these three conditions?
Also a very good question. The 2017 guidelines that came out from the AHA really took us by storm for the most part because we were coming off of JNC8. We were coming out of the SPRINT trial that looked at some of these things. So I think clinicians can assume for the most part that most adults with diabetes mellitus and hypertension will have a 10-year cardiovascular risk of at least 10%. And that places them in what we call a high-risk category that does require intervention of drug therapy for hypertension. And the marker or the surrogate blood pressure reading that we use is 130 over 80. So we know this is a high-risk population, and what the guidelines told us is that we need to intervene at those levels. When you look at the SPRINT trial in particular, that demonstrated a cardiovascular benefit from intensive treatment to a systolic blood pressure goal of less than 120. But interestingly enough, that did not include diabetic patients. And there's been some controversy on using intensive measures for blood pressure. That's where the AHA guidelines kind of helped us because it set the standard at blood pressure of 130 over 80 as both the spark for treatment in patients with diabetes, but also kind of the baseline that we want to look for. When you look at chronic kidney disease, we've seen hypertension reported in as high as 92% of patients. That's almost every patient you see with chronic kidney disease. And there are very few in my practice that are quote-unquote normotensive. And as renal function declines, the rate of hypertension increases. And high blood pressure may occur as a consequence of kidney disease, but even in this context, its presence is likely to lead to a further acceleration in kidney injury and kidney damage. Similar to our patients with diabetes, chronic kidney disease patients with hypertension are automatically assigned to high-risk category for ASCVD. And again, the threshold for pharmacological treatments, according to AHA guidelines, is 130 over 80. And when you look at that again, and you look at the SPRINT trials, that's my target that I look for right now. And I try to keep my patients within that range. Now, of course, we always look at that intensive trial. So let's say you're treating someone for high blood pressure and their pressures are low, as long as they're not having adverse effects, you can continue to do that. But the 2017 guidelines really focused in on this particular metric of keeping a blood pressure below 130 over 80. So I think that's been very helpful to guide us. And certainly you can review that piece as well in the Annals of Internal Medicine for further guidance on that.
Thanks again for joining me today, Dr. Matera.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.